Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with Marnie Batista. Firstly, Marnie, welcome and thank you for joining me.
I'm happy to be here. I love it. I love it when I love being in the space of talking about what creates healthy love. And so I'm honored that you have me here, to be honest.
Well, wow, thank you. Well, we first met a week or two ago when you interviewed me for your podcast, which I really enjoyed. So it's quite fun to have the shoe on the other foot and you got to ask me questions, but I've now got a bunch of questions that I want to ask you. So just to give people a bit of your background, Marnie Batista is known as the queen of making her clients irresistible to men in today's dating environment. Her program, Dating with Dignity, teaches successful women a cutting-edge process based on neuroscience and authenticity to attract a partner who is an equal on the path to fulfillment. Marnie is a certified professional dating and relationships coach and writer. And Marnie's weekly dating and relationship podcast, The Dating Den, has more than 25,000 downloads for each episode. So Marnie, I want to start at the beginning. I'm going to start throwing back to you the question that you asked me.
I know.
So how did you get into the world of becoming an expert in relationships?
Well, I was thinking when I interviewed you and you were talking about that fateful night and you were dating some woman and, you know, you had your little friends with benefits relationship moment, you drive off into the sunset and you're like, what was that? You know, what was I doing? Basically, I was the woman laying in the bed being like, why do I keep sleeping with this guy? Like he's so not my person. He says he's into me, but then like, I never hear from, like, that was me.
For Marnie's podcast, if you want to know what she's talking about, my story, go and check out her podcast. But
exactly. See, this is very 2021. You know, it's like interactive, you know, serial story. So yeah, I just, you know, I had a bad picker from the time I was in eighth grade. I remember I am a writer and I was writing this story about my first boy-girl party in the basement in Iowa. And I had a crush on this boy who was a year older and like the music came on. It was, remember that song, New York, London, Munich, Paris, everybody talk about pop music, that one. Okay. And so he came up and I was like, oh my God, I think he's going to ask me to dance. And I was like all a flutter. And he was like, hey, do you want to dance? And I stood up and then he goes, hey, I just wanted your chair.
What a prat.
I know. So literally that was the beginning of the end. I remember that's the moment where I thought if I could make myself invisible right now, I will. I like ran away. I remember him like sitting on the chair, like he had braces. I remember him like laughing, like talking to people next to him. I remember the whole moment. And I think that's where I first really decided that I wasn't enough. And as a result, I slept with people because I thought that if I slept with them, they would love me. I married my first husband because basically, you know, I mean, he asked me out the next day after I slept with him. That was like our romantic beginning. I was like, shit, this guy just called me. And I was with him for 17 years and I never felt like I could be enough. I was the one going to therapy. I was the one going to all the like 12 step, like what is wrong with me? And I got divorced and then I just basically met like a younger, better looking version of my husband. And I created that same pattern again. He cheated on me, with a game show hostess, which was mortifying. But even after that,
am I meant to laugh at that? I don't know.
It's so perfect, right? It's like, oh my God, you know, she's like the one who turns the things, not Vanna White, but, And then I still would do drive-bys like, oh, well, if he sleeps with me, then that means he likes me better, you know? And it was a moment where I had called his ex-wife to catch him in a lie. And it was back in the day of like MySpace. And I was like trying to message her And we got on the phone and I just was really ready to like talk about what a jerk he was. And she just said, you know, I just did this work on myself and I don't even know you, but I know that you don't deserve this and you're better than this. And this is the work that I did and I highly recommend it. And I wish you the best. And I was just like, what?
That wasn't the way you expected.
No, no, and not what I wanted. I wanted to be a victim, and I wanted her to agree with me and come up with an evil plan. And that was really the beginning of my personal development journey. And I really realized that, you know, I had lost and left myself and the light in myself. And I walked out of there having healed a lot of pieces. And that was the beginning of the healing. It wasn't like, and then I was fixed.
But it was when it sounds like healing became more important than just short-term feeling better.
100%. And it's really been the guidepost. And, you know, I dated for 5 years. And the reason why I started my company is because, and I have an amazing husband now. We've been together for 13 years. But my mission is, if I can help one person shave off 1 minute, you know, of the 42 years or whatever it was of not thinking I was enough, like, then my purpose here is fulfilled. And it takes courage, really. It takes courage and a plan. And that's why I'm here. I think that's why I was here, put here.
It takes courage. And sometimes it also takes enough pain associated with the path that one's on to just go, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. And it makes me sad. It's true. You know, like, I'm sure you all have this, and people who are listening, like, I just wish you wouldn't have to suffer so much to get better, because you don't have to. Like that's the thing. Like, don't wait till it gets so bad that you can't look at yourself in the mirror. Like, it's so fixable. It's so solvable. It doesn't have to be hard. It actually can be fun. I mean, you meet amazing people. You pivot to the path that you're meant to be on. That's in alignment with who you really are. So don't fight it.
Yeah. Yeah. You've done a lot of work over the years with women in the same situation that you were in. And I'm interested that, particularly, what are some of the patterns that you see that keep women stuck, that stop them from finding love, but in a sense also making the changes they need to make to become the person they need to become to be able to find that lasting love?
You know, the biggest pattern that I see is, can I curse on this show?
I mean, I don't see why not.
Okay. My pattern that I see the most is, well, I'm not as fucked up as I used to be. Right? Because I think that people have that, like, massive pain, like that big divorce or that big health scare or that big, you know, whatever it is, right? And they go to therapy and they figure out, you know, where it came from, and they, like, understand everything, and they finally get right with themselves. And they're just like, okay. And then they start to delve into, like, now I want a partner. And it's so terrifying, because that very thing they fought so hard for themselves becomes at risk, their safety, which is now in their own control. There's, you know, it's my little world, my little cozy condo. And they don't go to the next level, you know, because they're too afraid, because they're not as fucked up as they used to be. They're not as in as much pain. And they convince themselves, maybe I don't need a partner. Maybe I'm not meant for a partner. I'm happier this way anyway. All I need is this. And to me, that, and the reason I point to that one is because that is the pattern of very, very smart people who are very much able to rationalize and intellectualize a way to get out of finding a life of fulfillment and meaning, just because they're afraid of going back to where they were. And that, like, limbo, that liminal space when you're conscious, is hell.
You know, what comes to my mind as you're talking is, it's almost like the breakthrough at one stage becomes the limitation at the next stage. And what I mean by that is, it's like, I'm thinking of the example of it could be a man or a woman, but I'm thinking of the example of a woman, because that's what we're talking about, who has lacked strength and independence. And so has worked to cultivate these qualities of being able to be solid and be independent, but it almost, that pendulum swings so far that now it becomes the block to intimacy. Is that something that you see?
Yeah. And I know I did that in my own life. Like, I got out of that first marriage, like, where I was the queen of codependent no more. And I turned into a dude, basically, you know, and I was like, you know, I don't want to sleep over with this guy. Like, I want to wake up in my own bed and I don't need no stinking man. And, you know, and I created the shell around myself. And so I think what happens is that a lot of women do that because you had to survive. And I totally get it. But one of my clients many years ago described it this way. She said, I feel like I'm a Tootsie Roll, you know, like everyone sees this very hard, like, you know, shell. It's like I'm tantalizing, right? But like, I never stay with anyone long enough so they can get to like the soft part in the middle, because I'll never expose that. Like, I'm too scared to do that. And that's the pain. That's the new pain, because when you don't really feel known or seen for who you really are, that's very, very lonely. And also what she had said, and I think I hear this a lot too, is you feel like you're not in your own skin, like you're hiding from yourself. And that pain, yeah, you're not as messed up as you used to be, but over time, that pain of shutting yourself down just becomes a new pain. And we just get used to it. And that's so sad, so tragic to me.
It's almost like the harder the shell on the outside, the more tender the bit on the inside that one's trying to protect, right?
Yeah, totally. 100%. I'm moving out of my house and I found this like piece of paper where when I got a divorce, my daughter went to this therapist, and I don't know how it ended up, but she interviewed my parents. And the question to my mom was like, what was Marnie like when she was young? And my mom said, too emotional and like aggressive. And I was like, and that's it, right? I was like, I was so emotional. Like I was holding it all in. Like I had all these feelings and I just learned to hold them all in, that I just became aggressive. I was bitchy. I was selfish. I lashed out at people. And that's that thing of like, we have all these feelings and there's so much that we just develop this. And you know, we think we're hiding it. You all think you're hiding it because you look good on the outside and you present well, you know? But when you're going on these dates, and I'm sure you can totally speak to this, like, and there's just a vibe, right? And it sets people away from you.
So, yeah, I think there's something that's super important about feeling that someone is emotionally available. Like you can reach someone on a kind of heart level. And it's almost like the more layers of defense that we build up, the harder it is to reach that person. And then it might be that one is sexually attracted and there's chemistry, but in terms of depth of relationship, there has to be something that's softer that one can reach.
Well, yeah. And then what happens, that's great. And then what happens is that woman, like the old version of me, finds the old version of you who's unavailable.
Really got on gray, right?
Right, exactly, right?
For about a month.
For about a month, right? And exactly. And so then what happens is that's why your storyline becomes like, I can't get past the second or third date. Why is that when I really like someone, they disappear? Like, I can't meet any guys who meet my standards, right? Because you are unavailable, and then you're meeting people who are unavailable. So they're not your person. So you're right. You know, like you get to be right. But that's not the limit, right? Because when I became emotionally available, when I did that work, when I tore down the walls, I started to meet really amazing people who were flawed humans. They weren't perfect, right? But there was an ability to welcome that mirror. And I'm sure this is why you and your partner have this amazing marriage, because you're with this person who, when that mirror reflects something back, you're taking responsibility and you have these conversations and then you grow. It's not that finding your person is like, oh, and it was butterflies and unicorns and we never fought again.
We never got the butterflies and unicorns. I felt a bit robbed.
I have butterflies and unicorns, but I said to my husband yesterday, because we're moving and it's so stressful. And you know, we have not been pretty with each other sometimes. And I just said, I wish sometimes I didn't like you so much, because sometimes I just don't like you, but I like him and I love him. And that's like the relationship that we have, right? And so, and that requires vulnerability. And so it's like, don't get stuck in settling for being better than you used to be, right? And that's the big lie you tell yourselves. I'm not going to settle. I'm not going to settle for some guy. You are. You're settling for not having the life you know you're meant to live.
Yeah. We've been touching on it a little bit, but I'd love to open up a little bit more this idea of authenticity. Like the place that we are relating from, like what we're actually showing of ourselves. How important do you think that is?
Like everything.
So like a 5 out of 10?
yeah, exactly. I think, look, I believe that it's even deeper than authenticity. I think that our authenticity comes from this, like I call it your essential self. It's like your core soul, like the energetic part of you that is beyond your skin and bones, right? It's like this your ethereal light, your vibe, your energy, this unique, beautiful thing that was put on this planet for a reason. And when you look at, And you all know it, and I know it. Like we have that feeling where like this feels right, and then we have that feeling where like we feel off, we feel triggered, we feel annoyed, we feel like it's not right. We're living a life of shoulds, and so the more in tune we can get with that like compass of our essential self, then our behaviors will be authentic, right? And then that is what creates that irresistible vibe. That attracts that same sort of energy, right? And so that's what people are interested in. I do on my show episodes where we look at reality dating shows, right? As the lab. And there's this dude, and he's like this big, buff, super hot guy, like very like intimidating, right? And very guarded. And he's having a conversation with this woman because she's like saying, you know, like I'm looking for something real and I'm really scared because I don't know if I can break through that for you. I don't know if you're that guy who wants that. And this guy starts talking about his fears, right? About his own dad and about how he didn't show up for him as a kid and his mom. And he's so terrified of being that person. He starts crying and it's just like, and they start having this deep, deep connection, right? And it's like that guard is down and there's this authentic moment of connection. And that's more, so what I'm saying is, and I think, let me know what you think about this, but that's way more attractive and interesting than all his muscles and his bravado and all of that stuff. Because now I'm like, wow, I really see you. And that's someone speaking from their truth. And that's what's super sexy and hot.
I think there's also such a difference between the kind of more physical chemistry, which we can have with someone we don't even like. Like we can just have chemistry with someone. But does that mean we want to spend our life with that person? Like, of course, in the ideal world, we have some chemistry and we have that deeper connection.
Yes. I think I'm going to be quoting this Logan Urie. I had her on my show and she wrote a book, and I'm sorry, Logan, I can't remember the name, but I know she has a chapter called Fuck the Spark. Because she basically says, like, if that's how you're dating, like if that's all you're looking for is the spark, especially when you're a grown ass woman, like you need to get over that, because I always say love is necessary but not sufficient, and the spark is necessary but not sufficient, because, you know, 13 years later, you know, I love my husband and he's super attractive, but what I've realized, and I think you and I talked about this, is someone can be a freaking supermodel, and if they're not emotionally available, they will become the most unattractive, annoying human, and you will leave them. It does not matter how hot they are. We've all been in situations like that. You know, they, and How I Met Your Mother, he calls it the hot versus annoying scale, right? Like if someone becomes so annoying, then it doesn't matter how hot they are, right? And so, and then, yeah, that's the mindset, is we're like looking for that. We're looking for the spark. So it's like, you need to reset your compass.
Yeah. Yeah. What in your experience helps people be more authentic? Because it takes, I guess, awareness. It also takes courage to particularly dating, right? For most people, it's one of the most kind of uncomfortable things they do, meeting someone. Like, are they going to like me? Am I going to like them? We're going to know what to say. Like it's almost the most likely experience to trigger all of those masks and barriers to being authentic.
So how do you be authentic? I mean, that's the bazillion dollar question.
I hope you have an answer.
I do. Well, I do have an answer in that way, is that, and I'm going to make it really simple, because when someone asks me, you know, they tell me the whole story about like, he did this and then he did that. And I'm like, and they're like, no, but like there's like a story, as if the story, if I hear all the facts, then like, I will change my mind. And I don't, because really all I'm trying to ask is, what do you want to say? And they're like, well, what I want to say is, you know, that like, I don't want to waste my time and I really like you and I'm really scared of getting hurt. And I'm like, well, why don't we figure out a way to say that? No, but you don't understand. He's like, done, and I don't want him. And I'm like, ah. So the fastest way to your essence or your authenticity is, like, communication is a great laboratory for that, is like, write out, like, what is it that you really, really want to say? And then write down all the reasons why you think you can't. And then ask yourself the question, how true is that really? Because most people will say, I already know what he's going to say. And that's literally impossible. And if you're going to be intimate with someone, especially if you let him put the ding dang in the wing wang, like, then this verbal intimacy is make that be okay for yourself. And then figure out a way to say that from the soft inside spot, the from a place of love, not fear, a place of creation, not protection, and try it out. And even if you're too afraid to say it, just write it out, because that will give you a clue to what that vulnerable place looks like. And then ask for help to break through all the fears and limitations that are keeping you from speaking your truth.
Because we have all these, I think you're really pointing out all these stories about what we think is going to happen, right? But I think also one of the things that's kind of crazy is if we do show our authentic self and that person rejects us, like, that's quite important to know, right? Because at some point we're going to have to be our authentic self.
Well, exactly. And like, that's amazing, right? So like, that's when you actually get to see if this person is your match. So if you're avoiding that, then you're delaying. That's when you get to this, I spent like 6 months with this guy. Like, then that's when you're avoiding actually a real connection. And it's not a waste of time, but like, you're learning this lesson over and over and over and over again. You're like almost re-traumatizing yourself. So I call them, we call them on our campus box three moves, because of a whole paradigm that we use. But a box three move is the pain or the discomfort it takes to get to your vision. There is no express bus from your pain to your vision. You're going to always have to stop in this little box three and be uncomfortable, because it's new and it's scary. There is no express bus, right? So you're going to have to do something uncomfortable and scary, and you might fall down and it's going to be messy. When a little baby or a little toddler is learning how to walk and they pull themselves up on that coffee table and they take those first few steps and they crash, nobody goes, oh, you suck, you should never walk again. What do? We go, yay, good job. And the baby crawls back and starts up. And so that's what I want to say to you, is like, do it, say it, it's messy. Maybe he doesn't want to be your person. That's awesome. You practice with someone who it didn't matter anyway. There's more, and the more comfortable you get, like, I want you to imagine everyone who's speaking on this conference going, yay, good job, right? And crawl back and stand up. And then do it again. And you're not going to die, I promise, from speaking your truth. What you'll do is you'll learn the next thing you need to learn.
One of the things that I found, and I think it's part of what you're speaking to here as well, is that when I changed the place from which I was dating, the place from which I was meeting women, I started to meet a different type of person. Yes. But I also brought out something different in the people that I was meeting. It's almost like, the more that I went into my kind of idealized images and masks, the more they almost felt they had to do the same. So I'm interested in a sense, that the potential that as we change ourselves, it also has an impact on others, right?
Oh my gosh, so much so. I what you, it sounds so trite. Like, I just wish I didn't have to say it, but it's really like, you know, what you put out there is what you're going to get back. Be the person you want to attract, all that stuff. When, look, you've all been on the bad date with the guy who shows up kind of rushed, talking about like, oh my God, I couldn't get a parking spot and that jerk at the thing. And I'm so sorry. And da da da. And like, oh my God, you know, like, is there any, like, music is so loud. And he, right. You've been on that date. Right. And you're just like, whoa. Right. Like, you get guarded. You're like, if he's unconscious, if he's judging all this, what's he thinking? Right. We shrink. And then you've been with people, male or female, just in a room. And you're like, wow, that person has such great energy. Right. And you feel warm and you feel comfortable and you see, you feel seen. And so when you're on the date, while you're in the process, you don't need to wait till you're done to go on a date. I always like to say, pick one or two small things that you can do differently and set yourself up for small wins. Right. So like on this date, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to, make eye contact every once in a while. That's all I'm going to, just want to go on this date. I'm going to make eye contact. I'm going to go on this date. And my whole focus is when he shares something, I'm not going to go in the future and I'm not going to go in the past. I'm just going to like really be present in this moment as if I'm just wanting to know the soul of this person. That's all I care about. I'm just not going to be like, oh, he told me that he has a lake house. Maybe one day I'll go to the lake house. No. And I'm, you know, he tells me about his mother. I'm like, oh, is he going to treat me that way? No. You're just going to be present. So if you pick small things that you can create for yourself to practice on, it's less overwhelming and you can start to notice things and build skills. And then every date will be great because you've controlled the one thing you can control, which is yourself. And my guess is if you pick those things, you're probably going to make the other person feel super comfortable anyway. You're going to be less worried about the outcome. If they ask you out again, if he's your person forever, you're just doing your thing. Right. And it'll shift the energy. And I think when I tell clients to do this, they're like, oh my God, that was just so much easier. I mean, I actually had fun.
And yet it takes those, I think almost particularly those initial steps when we've been used to doing it a certain way for a long time, it takes courage, right? Like what do you find helps someone take that little leap? Like what resources someone to do that, do you find?
Well, you know, look, you can be motivated by pain or you can be motivated by opportunity, right? So you can think like, do I want to, you know, it really, I know this is not a fun question, but like, you know, when I have my last breath, do I want to think of all the things I didn't do because I was too afraid? Right. If you have kids or someone that you want to be a role model to, often I talk to parents, right, who are like, I want to model for my kids courage, or there's something that they value that they want to model. Find your why that really speaks to you. And if you're a person motivated by pain, you know, that's it. If you're the person who's like, you know, I know I'm going to be with somebody and I just see there's like this moment, I don't see his face, but like, you know, it's good. Like, this is what I need to do. Right. Like, and just, this is a step along the pathway, whatever it is, find it. There is no, I wish there was a shortcut. If you and I had the shortcut, we would, you know, interviewing both of us. But really in the end, like it's, I think everything comes down to being courageous. And it, you also, don't die from it.
It also, it strikes me as you're talking as well, that it comes down to a level of radical honesty, right? Like a kind of willingness to just get real with oneself rather to see it the ways that feel safe or feel convenient. Yeah, just get it, getting honest.
That's it. And it's funny, you know, like what we do is we teach people to date with dignity, and our company is Institute for Living Courageously. We're all about living courageously. And What I realized in my own journey is, and you said this word radical, and that's my new word, right? Is like, how can I, it's like, what would it look like to be involved in a radical living challenge, right? That's what I'm on right now. It's like, I'm just going to do stuff that feels so radically like outside my comfort zone. It's radical to my preconceived norms. Like, I'm going to be that person. I interviewed this guy named Rabbi Steve Leder about a book he wrote called The Beauty of What Remains. And it's a gorgeous book. And what he says is like, you know, like for most people, what they really want is when they round that last corner into their casket, they want to arrive there battered and bruised and sewn back together, you know, because they lived life like to the fullest. Because you are going to have like wounds and heartaches and breaks and all of those things, but you will have lived your full life. And that's really it. It's like, be radical, like live it so that when you do that last run into home base, you know, and you slide in, you go, you know what, I did it all and I left no stone unturned. And that's, I don't know, to me, that's a meaningful life.
How important is dating strategy, like online dating versus creating opportunity of, you know, going to events or, you know, blind dates? Like, how important is the strategy one uses to meet someone?
So that is such a fun question. Strategy is everything. Right? But without authenticity, strategy is nothing. Because I can teach you my strategy and you show up like the Tootsie Roll, like doesn't matter, right? Because it just won't work. But what I really want to share is that there is 100% like a strategy to online dating. It's basically marketing and branding, but it's doing it 2021 style, which means that you have to have ethics and you have to be in integrity because we want to buy the brands that we trust, right? And there's a way to write your profile that will make it stand out. And you want to have photographs that evoke a certain truth and reflection of who you really are. Because so many people, their photos are not.
Well, often their photos are the way they want everyone to see them as opposed to who they actually are, right?
Well, yes. Or also your best friend told you she loves that flower dress. No, not online. Also, most people's photos, their eyes are dead, right? Like they're not in their authentic self. They're like, right? Or whatever. So we see ladies who have amazing photos that they took, like they paid the most expensive photographer. They have beautiful clothes. And they're like, right. And then we do work with them. And then we work with them to get the photos taken and all those things. And it's like, oh my God, she looks 20 years younger and 10 pounds lighter and nothing changed.
But it's
she's not wearing a print top, but yeah.
You can overproduce as well, right? Like if a dating profile looks so slick, it lacks the vulnerability that often makes us attractive.
Well, absolutely. And I think, yes. So I recommend professional photos, but there is a totally different vibe of that really stilted, false, overmade up, dressed in something that you think men really want to look at. It's like a pet peeve because I look at people's profiles and I'm just like, you wonder why it's not working for you. It's like obvious. Or your profile, so dating strategy, your profile is a reflection of everything you don't want, all your hurts. Like, I bet if you and I sat down and we looked at three profiles, we could say the dating history of each person.
That would be fun.
Right?
We should totally do that one evening.
Yeah, exactly. They totally, you know, were da da da. They dated a rich guy. They dated a broke guy. They dated, you know, this guy. You know, they're really busy. They're very career driven. Like, they care what other people think. Like, it's just so obvious. I call it leaking. And so you want to write your profile in a way that paints a picture for a guy to be like, wow, this is this person, being with this person would be like amazing. We have the same things in common. I think the other thing that people do, which is a huge mistake in their strategy, is they're trying to get everybody so they get nobody. Because if you're a guy and you dated online, how many of you said, I love to dress up and I also like to go for walks on the beach, freaking everybody. and who cares, right? Like, so what I love is that when you narrow, you have your profile be a reflection of your top five core values, and don't be afraid. But then what if a guy isn't into the environment? Well, if environment is your like top deal breaker, then you don't care about the guy who drives the diesel Mercedes. You want the guy who is really into a green life. And those things sound silly, but they're not. If that's something you really, really care about, that's important. What I don't want you to care about, which I've heard, is, how many books does he read? Does he know? I had someone who said, like, if a guy doesn't know how to properly set the table, I would not date him. We talked about this on an episode the other day about like ways sabotage happens online. Like, oh, he has a typo in his profile. I would never date him. Right. Like, so there's just a bunch of things that y'all are doing that is making it harder than it needs to be. And what I will say is, if you have the authenticity and the strategy, dating is easy and fun and efficient.
It's so funny, as you were talking about the kind of narrowing, I was like, putting in business terms, you're talking niching, aren't you? Or niching, as you call it in the States. It's like, you got to pick a niche. It's like, and it makes sense.
It does. I had someone I interviewed once. Oh God, I love her. She was so like naive. She was like, I have three kids and I keep dating these men that like get turned off by the fact that I'm busy with my kids, or like they don't want to like come watch soccer games or whatever. And I was like, well, do you have it in your profile that you have kids, that family is really important to you? And she was like, well, no, that would obviously turn off a bunch of men. Like, I'm trying to cast a wide net. And I was like, okay, honey. Well, that's why you're meeting people who aren't family guys. You need to redo your profile so that it's like about family. Like, whether you have kids or not, we both love like being able to spend our time going to the soccer game and then getting a babysitter and, you know, blah, 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 whatever. Or, you know, whatever it's going to be, like, don't try and get everyone. You just want your one. You only need one. I mean, for the context of this conversation, you're only looking for one.
Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it? I love what you're saying, that it's awareness and its strategy. It's authenticity and its strategy. Because you can see how people will be all about strategy and not have the authenticity, or people do all that inner work, but they have a crap strategy. Like, you got to have those two pieces together.
You do. And it's amazing when people come to me and they're like, I already did the inner work. And I'm like, great. I'm not your coach. Go hire the online dating coach, or go hire someone to write your profile. Like, I think you're wrong, but like, I'll go for it. Like, I'm not here to argue. And I've talked to those people that have done all those things, and they're like, it's not working. And I'm like, well, come into my office.
So, Marnie, I think you and I could have. I love the idea, but I'm looking at the data profiles and working out. It really appeals to my sort of inquisitive, curious nature. If you were to leave people with a couple of really simple places to start, we'll talk in a minute how people can find out more about you and your work, and that's obviously a place that they can go deeper in. But a couple of like simple starting points, what would you say?
Okay. Two things. One is, I call it the judgment journal, and it doesn't have to be a journal. You can do it on your phone, but I want you to, for 7 days, keep track of every time you have a judgmental thought about yourself or others, and note it. And like within probably 48 hours, you'll be like, oh my goodness, I'm so judgmental for myself and others. And that's the awareness. So if you do that for 7 days, you will have the answer to why things aren't working for you, because you're not loving yourself and you're judging other people. And that is like, hopefully will give you enough pain or the ability to see the possibility. Because when you get out of that, then like, you could imagine how your whole life would be different. So that's number one. And number two is, I call it the 30 interaction challenge, which means put your phone down and start interacting with people. Flirt with life, as my friend Kim says. Talk to the barista, have a conversation with the guy at the gas station when you're paying for your gas, right? Like, start practicing being you, authentically you, interacting with people without any attachment to outcomes or rejection or any of those things. Do that 30 times and see how much more joy you have in your day.
That's awesome. I love that. Marnie, for people that want to find out more about you and your work, what's the best way to do that, and what can they find?
They can go to datingwithdignity.com and they will find our podcast. They will find a lot of very specific and juicy blogs with some tips and some tricks, as they say, and more about how we could work together.
Awesome. Marnie, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for your time.
Mwah.